Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Linden. Got Paul Craig Roberts back again. Paul writes on so many important issues. Paul, I don't know what's on your mind this morning, but on mine today and yesterday and the day before and so many previous days, I can't prove it. I don't have inside information, but I can just smell a greater war coming in Syria. Any thoughts from you on that?
Well, you're probably right, because we started all of that with proxies. And Washington being what it is, in fact, Americans being what they are, they always want their team to win. So if they start something, they want to prevail. And so I think that since the proxy war doesn't seem to have worked, or at least not yet, and since the Russians are kind of beginning to put something of a foot down against it all, I wouldn't at all be surprised if we don't escalate it in some way. You know, you saw, as I did, that Obama asked the Pentagon for a no-fly plan. I'm not quite sure how that would work if Russia actually delivers those missiles to Syria.
We know, we don't really
whoever's trying to enforce the no-fly plan is going to get shot down.
How these missiles work and what's involved in installing them and training people and so on, I don't know, Paul. I don't know anything about missiles and using them and firing or whatever, but there are mixed reports on these missiles. These are sophisticated anti-aircraft missiles, S-300s, they're called, and they have a long range. They're very, very accurate. I wrote several times about them. I think they're accurate within a few meters of a target within something like 200 kilometers. I mean, that's pretty accurate stuff. So you fire off a couple of these things, there's a good chance you're going to hit what you're shooting at. There are mixed reports on whether any of these have already arrived. The contract between Syria and Russia was signed years ago, 5 or 6 years ago. Now, why would you sign a contract and wait 5 or 6 years for delivery? So maybe some of these were delivered some time ago and they were installed, but Syria doesn't want to give Israel inside information, so you don't hear very much said about it. And then Israeli intelligence denies that anything came. It's the Mossad connected Adepka file has written a number of stories on this. One of them said, a recent one said, that a shipment with 60 tons of material from a Russian ship came to Syria, and it implied that maybe these missiles were in that shipment. And then a follow-up Depka file report said that it looks like, well, it quoted Israeli intelligence saying that nothing has been delivered yet. And Assad, in an interview on Lebanese television, suggested that he got a delivery. But who knows? Who knows? Would it be a game changer? If there's a plan to attack Syria, Paul, I don't think these missiles are going to stop that plan. I agree with you. Washington kicked this thing off in the first place. They did not start this conflict, the proxy war, to suddenly change their mind and say, oh, we made a mistake, we're going to call the whole thing off. I think what they're going to do is rev it up.
They really can't rev it up. I mean, if they have a no-fly program, they can try to reinvigorate what are called rebels. Of course, they're not rebels. They're outside forces organized by the United States and its proxies. But I don't know to what extent air power has played a role in the relative greater success of the Syrian military, as opposed to the invaders. The Russians apparently are still denying that they have sent these missiles, but they say that they intend to. I don't really know what the long delay in sending the missiles was caused by. Possibly the Russians didn't want to provoke us. Possibly they weren't sure about the situation and didn't want their missiles falling into enemy hands, so that some way could be found to combat them, because they are effective. And of course, the Russians have a later generation of that, the 400. So they probably just don't want the technology out. Certainly they wouldn't want us or Israel to get those missiles. That could be one of the main reasons they've not delivered them. They're just uncertain about the situation. For us to get into it, it really, unless we, you know, do it from the air, but apparently among the NATO, only the British and the French are gung-ho for that, and the other countries aren't. So I don't know. It could be that we're running out of ways. You know, the Libyan thing annoyed a lot of people, including the Russians and Chinese, but also some of the NATO people, countries. So I think they want to overthrow Assad just because they started. I mean, there's no real... They've never given a reason for doing this. And there's no real reason to overthrow him. In fact, there's every reason not to, because it's a secular government. It was widely supported. And what will take its place would be an Islamist government, which, of course, is not in our interest, or in the interest of our puppet states like Saudi Arabia. So it's a very strange thing where the United States and its vulnerable puppets, you know, the oil emirates in Saudi Arabia, which oppress their people and steal all the oil wealth for a few princes. It's a funny thing for them to want to have an Islamist government there and to be supporting Islamist extremists, including Al-Qaeda. So it's just hard to figure that. You know, I think I wrote once, you may have also some time ago, that it could be the strategy is just to break these countries up into warring factions so that they cease to exist as countries that can take a stand on anything. Sort of like Iraq, you know, where the bombings and killings are at the same high level as they were during the attempted occupation by the United States. And Libya, of course, is just disappearing in chaos. So maybe that's the goal. It's an Israeli goal, I think, to have these countries so fragmented that they're not essentially able to function as nation states.
Paul, that is absolutely right, and I've written about that a few times, and I have another Syria article that I'll get out tomorrow, and I mentioned that very thing in the article. Israel has a greater Israel scheme, and I mean, America has the same idea, not so much a greater Israel, but the notion of balkanizing these states, break them up into ethnic groups, warring sectarian factions, and so on. If you weaken them and make them smaller, it facilitates greater Israeli control, greater U.S. control, and Israel is the only country in the world without fixed borders. It's almost inconceivable, Paul, that a country can exist for any period of time without fixed borders. But throughout its history, Israel has never had fixed borders, and the reason is because it wants to expand them. It wants surrounding territory. It wants part of Jordan, Lebanon. It wants as much as it can get, and it calls it a greater Israel. But the notion of breaking up these countries in the region to make them weaker and smaller, this is an easier way to control them. The Israeli plan goes back decades, and certainly the U.S. idea not just in the Middle East, but anywhere where they want to weaken enemies, would be to break them into pieces. The Yugoslav war did exactly that. The Iraq war, three Iraqs basically now instead of one. And as you say, Libya is just a cauldron of violence, and Iraq is a cauldron of violence as well. Whether they care much about an Islamic a ruling state or a secular one, I don't know, Paul. What they really want are leaders subservient to Western interests, mainly U.S. interests. And so often the way they get these things is waging one war after another. This one may be the toughest of all. Syria is the biggest nut they've tried to crack, and it could be that what they're trying to do will be on what they're able to do. This thing could easily cross a number of borders. Some of their so-called allies could be terribly affected, and we could see this thing spill into a major regional war. And if it gets to that state, it's possible it could go beyond the region, and we're talking about something that could be in some ways global. This is really serious, and it's also possible that if things get hairy enough, we could see real nuclear weapons used, not just depleted uranium, but nuclear bombs, and they can make them in any strength. You got these bunker busters that are threatened to be used against Iraq. You can make them in small size. You can make them bigger size. But there are enormous risks in this, and there really is a risk of something really major breaking out, and that all the countries who thought they supported this thing, they may end up being harmed as much is the ones that they want weakened and taken out and so on. So this thing just has enormous risk in my mind.
Well, you're probably right. I can't say that I'm an expert on this. I don't know. It's a pity that the Muslims are so split. They seem to hate each other worse than they do the foreign people who come in to abuse them or conquer them. And it makes them impotent. I mean, it's strange, isn't it? The United States has got Muslims fighting Muslims.
It really is strange.
And supposedly these Muslims are a great danger to the West. It seems like they're mainly a danger to each other. And it makes you wonder why they don't perceive what the real threat is. Instead, carry on some ancient feud that really hasn't any basis in the modern context.
You know, Paul, there are differences, I guess, in all the major religions. I mean, Christianity, you get so many different Protestant sects. Have you ever heard about one getting really angry and doing something violent against another one? I honestly can't think of any. I can't think of any of that stuff here or in any other country. Maybe some of that happens, but whether it's religious-based or not, I just don't know. Are Protestants fighting with Catholics or Jews fighting with Christians? I mean, in most places I can think of, you certainly don't hear stories about this stuff. So why should one Muslim sect go after another one? I think in some of these countries, Paul, like Iraq, there really wasn't too much tension between Shias and Sunnis, but when conflict comes into an area like the wars that America waged, they stoke these tensions and they literally create something that either didn't exist or there wasn't very much of it before. So I think the wars, the Western wars, stoke up a lot of this.
Yeah, that's true. And of course, what we call dictators like Saddam Hussein and this fellow and his father in Syria. They're really secular parties, and they have to be authoritarian in order to prevent the Shiites and the Sunnis and various other smaller sects from being at each other's throat. You couldn't possibly have a country where one's in one religious group's in charge of the other religious group. So people like Saddam Hussein and Assad are really performing a political function of preventing the kinds of religious war between the sects. So I don't really know. It seems to me it's a criminal act to go in to remove them, because you then unleash all this violence that we've been witnessing. And I think the same in Libya. So you could probably conclude from this that that's the purpose. The purpose is to create an unstable situation where the Muslims are at each other's throat. Therefore, they're out of our way and they're out of Israel's way. And if that's the case, then they've achieved that. They probably don't need to do anything in Syria because it's all stirred up. It'll probably stay that way.
Well, most of what stirred up, Paul, are these fighters that have come in from other countries, and Assad claims, maybe from people that they've captured, that fighters have come in from 29 different countries. I don't know what the official number, what the real number is, but there's no question that so many, the worst elements have been brought in from abroad. I think there's always been internal opposition to the regime, but it's been mostly nonviolent. The violence didn't start until over a couple of years ago, and this was stoked by the West. And I've said this many times, and it's Syria is Washington's war. This war was planned long ago. I quoted General Wesley Clark, who wrote about it in his book, Winning Modern Wars. And, I mean, he certainly was no peacenik. He was the NATO commander that ravaged Yugoslavia in 1999. But he said after 9/11, shortly after, he went back to the Pentagon and met with some of his old friends there. And they told him that America was planning to go to war with half a dozen or so countries. And he feigned surprise. A general who's been a warrior all his life, he feigned surprise, and in his own words says something like, do these countries threaten to attack us?
He did report it, and so that's important. He did an important function.
Oh, he did,
in
absolutely.
Reporting it. He no doubt hurt himself very badly with the United States government when he did that, and he won't get the kinds of perks that such high-ranking generals usually get. You know, he won't get on the boards. He won't get consulting contracts, lobbying business. So by speaking out, he performed an important service. It's a wonder they didn't try to arrest him like Bradley Manning
for
releasing information like this. But I guess it's hard to do to such a prominent, high-level general.
It really is surprising what he did, but he absolutely did it. He went on television and he did it.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's still on, Paul. I don't follow the U.S. media, CNN's and the rest of them, but it seems to me that I remember, I forget when, but at some point he was on CNN a number of times talking about different things. He may have been a CNN consultant at some time.
Well, I'm sure his argument doesn't fit in with the official explanation, which is this is a dictator and he's oppressed people and they've risen up against him and they're all Syrian rebels. And all those lies don't fit in with the general saying, yeah, we've had a plan for some time to overthrow the country. So I think he's disappeared because the media's, of course, the hand servant for the government. And so they're spreading the lies that Assad is a brutal dictator and has to be removed so there can be freedom and democracy. So I don't think you'll hear much more about Wesley Clark.
Well, Paul, we have a gruesome situation abroad, and things certainly aren't too terrific at home. And you've done so much writing on that. You want to comment on the home front?
Well, there's so many things. If you look at it, the home front looks like a criminal organization. The corporations and Washington are in cahoots, in crime, in breaking every law on the books, and giving special protection to the gangsters that are part of the governing coalition. And you see it everywhere, whether it's the financial markets, whether it's agribusiness, wherever you look, you see. Look, take this Monsanto, or now known as Monsate. It produces these genetically modified crops, the safety of which has not been proven. In fact, studies abroad indicate that they're extremely dangerous things. They produce high rates of tumors and cancers and premature aging and infertility and all sorts of things. And here, there are no studies because all the studies are funded by Monsanto. And you have the Environmental Protection Agency, the FDA, all the regulatory agencies are now in the hands of the corporate criminals. They run them. And so the research that the government relies on comes from Monsanto-paid people. And the few who speak out against it, like Don Huber, the professor at Purdue University, the microbiologist, soil pathologist, the crop expert, they just get brushed aside. So we have that kind of a situation where food is being altered in ways that are not known to be safe. And then the Congress comes along and passes a bill that protects Monsanto from any consequences of its product. Now, as you know, class action suits, there are jillions of them, and many of them are based on nothing, just hardly any kind of a imagined infraction that they can come up with. Well, here's something real. And so what do? They pass a law that there can't be any class action suits against Monsanto, no matter if the whole population dies. So this is a level of criminality that is hard to fathom. It's hard to get your mind around it. I mean, even in science fiction, I don't know that we've ever had criminality as real as that it exists today in the United States between the corporations and the government. The financial markets are rigged. The gold and silver markets are rigged. Everything is rigged to serve a tiny handful of people. And, of course, the media is part of the rigging. They can't say anything about it. They'd be fired, or the editors would be fired, the reporters would be fired. They all know it. So there's no reporting. And for people on the Internet, they just don't have resources like major newspapers and television stations had or still have to some extent. They just can't use them. So I think that's what we are now is a criminal state. The government consists of criminals. The corporations are criminals. They're in it together.
Well,
it's lawless. It's a lawless kind. The law only applies to little people, tiny little people. They bear the brunt of the law, but the real gangsters, I mean, they're really far worse than the mafia. The mafia at least had some kind of honor among themselves. So I don't really see how a country comes out of a situation like that. How do you get out of it when all of the important institutions are totally corrupt?
Paul, I think we're too far gone. I've certainly commented on that topic a number of times, and I literally feel that the nation, no nation is perfect, and America certainly never was perfect, far from it. But looking back at the country that you and I grew up in, and we've talked about this before on air, it was so much different back then. I mean, just the notion that you could go to college and graduate school, you could do it affordably, you could buy a car or a home affordably, and if you got yourself a decent education, you could come out, and there really were opportunities for you. I mean, just ordinary people. Certainly, I came from a very ordinary background. Well, today, if I fast forwarded half a century from then to today, and I was just coming out of school, there'd be literally nothing I could look forward to unless I was very, very lucky. I mean, the job market is abysmal. You can get yourself a degree, 2 degrees, maybe 3 degrees, and it really isn't going to help you very much. I finished grad school, and not in a recession, but in a soft economy, and I had no problem in the world landing the kind of job I wanted. But again, I couldn't do that today. Plus, all of this chicanery that goes on, there's always been that kind of stuff, but it's so out of control today with government and major big business, oligopoly business tied together. Each supports the other. One hand feeds the other. And the system is so corrupt and corroded. At some point, Paul, I think this whole thing just has to come crashing down. I don't know how long you can keep this thing going. But the only solution I have to what we're going through is we literally have to get rid of it and start over again and build a sane, just society. None will ever be perfect. And you can change one system or go to another, and you never know what you're going to get. You can get rid of bums and get new bums. So you just never know about that. Revolutions often don't turn out so well. But we certainly need to do something to fix what we have now. The problem today versus many years ago, Paul, is we've got the kind of weapons that in the hands of people that really, really are rogues. They just may end up destroying everything. And that's the thing that I fear most, that we'll literally end up either in a nuclear cloud or we'll destroy the environment. It may be a race between the two to see which happens first.
That's right. And they also have amazing surveillance so that it's almost impossible for some kind of an organized movement to get underway because the surveillance is total. And so they can always nip things in the bud, arrest the ringleaders. It's, I'm not sure much can happen to correct the situation. Except just outside forces. You know, the dollar collapses and they can't pay the bills and they suffer some military disaster, or it turns out that with all the bad agricultural and GMO and food practices that they're overwhelmed with medical problems. Population that becomes dysfunctional. I think those are all likely developments. You know, with Monsanto playing God, and they don't have any idea of the consequences of what they're doing. You just can't tell what is going to happen. And with all the antibiotics they feed the poultry and hogs and beef and all the synthetic hormones and the pesticides, it looks like the honeybees are heading for extinction. And you can't tell. I mean, the whole place may go for reasons that nobody is paying much attention to.
Well, Paul, I don't know if you feel the way I do, but I think about the situation and I say, I would not want to be a young person today. What in the hell would I have to look forward to? It looks so dismal and scary to me. I honestly don't know what the devil there is to look forward to, and it scares me. I mean, the higher species may turn out to be the one that other species don't destroy themselves. They do what they have to do to survive, but they don't go around looking for enemies to attack, to do this, that, or whatever. But the human species seems to be the only one that thrives on violence and destruction and so on, and we may end up destroying ourselves and everything else with us. We're just about out of time, Paul. A final thought?
Well, I thought we sounded pretty dismal today.
Oh, sure did. Well, we need to sound the alarm. We need to tell people what the devil we're up against, because the only way change could ever come is if ordinary people decide they're just not going to take this anymore. They certainly can't elect a new bunch of politicians to do it, because they won't. It's never happened before. It's never worked before. It won't work now. Again, Paul, very, very scary. I got to get off. I am out of time. Paul, I look forward to getting you back again. We'll keep saying things the way we think they are and hope people take it to heart, and maybe we'll end up doing something right one of these days. Many, many thanks, Paul.
Enjoyed the conversation, Steve.
Join us tomorrow, Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.